So there I am in 1973, and I'm the DJ at the Cat's Whiskers in Hull. And we've got a revolving turntable, we've got a revolving stage as well. And I'm playing a record there, and I introduce, and my opening line was, "Are you ready, Steve? Are you ready, Andy?" And of course, they came round there on the moving stage. I've never seen Fan Mania like it. Unbelievable. I thought I'd seen Fan Mania when I saw the Beatles operate, but I'll tell you what, the Suite had one hell of a fan base, and they're all they're all under 14.
Wow! I've got roots in Hull.
Yeah.
Do you remember Aubrey's Super Save?
Well, I was only there, you know, doing gigs. I wasn't there.
You were gigging. Okay, yeah. Fine. Because I've got family there, and they run these shops, or had the shop.
Yes, sure.
So whenever I used to go to Hull, I used to pop in and see them. But if I was doing radio in Hull, everyone said, "Oh, we know Aubrey's. We know Aubrey's."
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Jeff's been up there getting toilet rolls today.
Well, he could have sort of supplied you with toilet rolls forever.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, here's a guy. Listen to this. He started life in the Paramounts. Yeah. Now, I was going to open with Poison Ivy, but
wow.
I'll tell you what, that's a great song. I mean, done by so many people, including the Lambrettas, but Paramounts did a version. So he was in there, and then somewhere along the way ends up producing Sweet Shop, or Var Butterscotch, I should think.
Yeah.
And Don't You Know, that was a big record. It might have been very cheesy. I mean, I'm playing with a lot of analogies here with Butterscotch, but at the end of the day, you know, that was a big record, Butterscotch.
It was, but I was really a session drummer.
Yeah?
That's how it came about. I used to do all Arnold Martin Murrow sessions.
Yeah.
So Butterscotch was their creation, and I happened to be playing on it. I also played on their song Can't Live Without You for Barry Manilow.
Wow.
Oh. So I was on the demo for that.
Yeah.
But they said, "Would you like to be in the band?" And I went, "Well, yeah, why not?"
Absolutely. Now, look, 1970, I've got to ask you this because I never really got any sense out of Andy Scott when I spoke to him about it there, except the fact that he said about a contract negotiation with Nicky Chinn and Mike Chapman, which was interesting as well, and they walked off with a big cheque at the time. But he saw them arriving in these big cars, and he thought, "We've got to have them. But what's your opinions of Chinn and Chapman, because they were so commercial. I mean, very different in their way. As we know, Mike went on to work with a lot of things, including producing Blondie. Yep. But Nicky Chinn and Mike Chapman, you met him, I think, in 1970.
I met Nicky Chinn before I met Mike Chapman, because I used to try and write songs with Nicky, but we didn't come up with anything. It was just a bit of a blank space. So, but I, you know, when he turned up with Mike Chapman, I discovered them.
Wow.
In fact, I wanted to sign them to my, because I had a little publishing company, and that was the agreed deal, encouraged them to write. Well, I mean, you know, we talked about who we're going to write for, what the market was going to be, and, you know, the analysis was that we should write a song or have a song like Sugar Sugar, because if you think about the Archers, they actually didn't. There was no band.
No, it didn't exist.
So there was a big market.
Yeah.
You know, it was a kind of a bubblegum market.
Yeah.
So I said, "You go off and write some songs like that and come back to me." So they did, and they came back with Funny Funny.
Yeah.
But we didn't have a band.
Yeah.
So I said, "Well, you know, leave that with me." We actually did the demo. We actually put the track down, and Mike Chapman sang all the voices. And it was actually a pretty cute record. And that night, I think, or that week, I was doing a BBC live broadcast from Aeolian Hall, which was in Bond Street in those days. I was doing a Butterscotch thing. So, when you're doing a live session, you're concentrating on getting your part right, playing the songs right, getting the tempo right. And I caught something out the corner of my eye, and there was these two guys sat behind me. And it was Brian and Mick from Sweet. And I turned around and I went, "My word, you frightened me." Because they kind of sat there and said, "Well, have you got a song like that for us?" And I said, "Can you come to my flat tomorrow morning? I've got something that might..." might interest you. Now, bearing in mind, I had sweet signed as Sweet Shop maybe 2 years earlier. And they were signed to Fontana, and we put out a record, and it failed.
Yeah.
But I knew that this band were really, they were good. They were a great Motown band. They could play all the hits from Motown, and, you know, they were just very, very competent. And I played them Funny Funny. And they said, well, you know, we're signed to Air London, which was then George, you know, the Beatles producer.
Yeah, George Martin,
George Martin's label. And they were loath to leave that label, and they still had some time on that contract.
Yeah.
So we had to kind of wait for their contract to run out, and then we said, now will you put your voices on it? Now can we put the record out? And it was like, you know, yes, very kind of, you know, they weren't that sure whether this was going to be any good or not. We had nothing to lose. They did. They actually had more to lose than we did. So I said, well, look, why don't you just put your voices on? And, you know, legally I can't put the record out, but I can pay you a session fee. And we put their voices on, and I said, so what do you think now? And they said, well, it sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how it grew. That was the first record.
Fabulous. And, of course, talking about Fanmania, let's move on a bit. You co-wrote then a number one single for Bay City Rollers in Give a Little Love. Now, they were huge. We all remember that famous thing with the Radio 1 Roadshow where they were stuck in the middle of an island there at the raceway track and all the fans diving into the water to try and get with them. I've spoken to Les McEwan several times, and that was quite frightening for them because their Fanmania was also really, really high at that time. And you produced Bye Bye Baby, didn't you?
Yeah, I produced Bye Bye Baby.
Sure.
And Give a Little Love.
Yes.
And Money Honey. And I did two albums with them.
Yes.
So, you know, I kind of got them right at the peak.
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you something as well. I admire you for some of the one-liners you are famous for. Well, here's a good one. Here's a good one. Probably one of the best quotes I've ever heard in my life. Here we are with Billy Idol. Right?
I know what's coming.
Okay, and Billy Idol was very insecure.
This is a famous one-liner.
Yeah, it is. This is the famous one-liner. The listeners have got to hear this one. What an insecure guy he was there, old William Broad. And and here he is with Generation X, and he's very insecure, and he says to you, do you think I'm going to make it? And your response is, well, you're absolutely bloody talentless, but you look great. Billy Idol, eat your heart out. I mean, here is a guy who's gone out to California, got his hair done. He's got more highlights than Match of the Day.
Well, no, he had those highlights before he went out.
Oh, did he? Oh, I thought he got highlights
before he went out. I said, you look bloody marvellous. It's talentless. The whole band are talentless.
Yeah.
I didn't put it quite so nicely, to be very honest with you.
Really? Yeah.
No, I still come up with the odd one liner. You think to yourself, do you say this or do I just bite my lip? No, say it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, of course, you know, also, Phil, some of the songs that have come out right of left field, and I put in this category Pete Wingfield and 18 with a Bullet.
Yep.
When I think of Adrian Gurvitz and Classic, I don't know why I think of those two together, because they were one-hit wonders. But, you know, Gurvitz had a talent, and here comes a song. I mean, that was so different from anything else that was around at the time. Yep. But I'll tell you what, it does not still sound good on the radio.
I know. Do you know what? I asked to have my name taken off that.
No.
And I don't know why you and how you knew I produced it.
Uh-huh. Well, I've got friends in low places, you see.
Right,
and
because I struggled. I was in a band with Adrian. Well, I wasn't actually in the band.
Yeah.
He had a band called The Gun.
Yeah.
And it was called Race with the Devil.
Brilliant song. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I was booked to play on the album because they didn't think their drummer was good enough.
Yeah.
I think I was in and out the studio in about 3 or 4 days. Just I did all the tracks.
Yeah.
Paul me to one side. That's his elder brother.
Yeah.
That's Adrian Gurwitz's elder brother was in the band too. And he said, Phil, you know you're in. I said, what do you mean? I mean, he said, well, you know, you've got to grow a beard, but you're kind of, you're in the band.
Yeah.
I said, look, you know, I don't want to seem ungrateful, but I don't want to be in your band. Now, I was in Los Angeles about 18 months ago, and I had supper with Adrian and his wife.
Oh, nice.
And myself and my wife. And we laughed ourselves to tears when we talked about all this.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've actually been friends ever since. And, of course, Adrian, he was... He took over from Jimmy. When you get to my age, you kind of get these blocks. The black guitar player that plays with his teeth.
Yeah. Oh, Jimi Hendrix. Yeah.
From Hendrix.
Yeah.
And he was playing in a band out there, and he was kind of lost in Los Angeles. And when I was kind of busy and I was out there a lot. I bumped into him, and he said, you know, great to see you, put his arm around me, you know, give me a hug, why didn't we work together? And then when he came to England, he was kind of a bit of a lost soul, and I said, come and hang out with me, I've got a studio complex, you can hang out in Studio 2 and just do demos. And I said, okay, you know, use the space, use the time that I've got for free.
Yeah.
So... he was playing all these, you know, kind of heavy metal things, and yeah, they were fine. And he's a very, very talented player and a great voice.
Yes, very good.
And then I think one day I got this call, because my office was not in the studio, it was in the house at the back, and I got this call. He said, Phil, he said, I've written this thing on the piano. Come and have a listen. So I kind of toddled over to the studio, and he sat down, and he said, you know, let me play you something. And he played me classic.
Yes.
And, you know, the opening line, I kind of cringed a bit.
Yes.
And I went, okay, I'm going to write a classic, going to write it in an attic. And then he came up with another couple of lines, and I went, Adrian, that's even worse than the opener.
Yes.
And I wrote, I think, the third and fourth lines in that song for him, because... they were cringeworthy.
Yes.
And then I said, so what do you think? He said, well, you know, yeah. He said, I can live with that, if you can live with that. And I said, okay, fine. Now, we actually did a demo, and it sounded really good. And I said, but we haven't really cracked it yet, have we? I said, we've got a hit song, but we haven't made a hit record. So we went in studio... and we did it again, and mixed it up, and, you know, it still didn't sound like a hit. Yeah. So we had this little joke going by, does it sound expensive? You know, does it sound worth the money? That's kind of like...
that's how you came about
it. A very
it.
Kind of different angle to, does it sound expensive enough? And we said, no, it doesn't. So actually, we went in and made it a third time, and the third time when we mixed it, it really sounded expensive.
Great.
And it sounded right. Love. But you know what? I took that round the record companies, and nobody wanted to sign him.
Yeah.
And, you know...
did it come through Mickey Most and Rack in the end?
Adrian was playing... he was playing squash with David Most.
Yes, so we got the Rack Records.
That's right, and that's how it ended up on Rack.
Oh, fantastic. Now, you also work with Dollar, and you work with XTC, so Andy Partridge as well in there.
Yes, we did have a bit of a tussle.
Yeah.
You know, again, there are a few one-liners in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, that guy... I wanted to sign XTC to Utopia.
Yeah.
And every time I'd come up with an offer, it was
not the right
Virgin
one.
Would actually always kind of double whatever if I offered him £50,000 to sign, he would offer £100,000. So that I kind of ran out of money.
Yeah.
I just in the end I couldn't compete. But then they had the the nerve to come back and say, but we'd still like you to produce it.
Isn't that fantastic? Well, they of course, did some really unusual stuff,
yeah.
which was great.
Yeah.
Top of the show today, Phil, we played the brand new single by the Boomtown Rats. She said no.
Okay.
My producer said he wasn't quite sure. He thought it was very retro, didn't you, Aid?
Yeah, very different. Yeah,
you know, in terms of how it sounded.
Yeah.
But you yourself, of course, managed to produce I Don't Like Mondays.
Yeah.
Following on from the famous event of the young lady in school,
I know.
But how was it, you know, working with Bob in those days? I mean, was he hard to work with?
No, Bob actually ran the show. You know, it was Bob's show. The boys just turned up and did what they had to do. Which was fine. They were the only band that had one leader.
Yeah.
I've worked with dozens and dozens of bands, and you'd always get, you know, a little bit of friction, and then in the end, you know, you say, well, I'm going to try both ideas and whichever one. No, this was Bob's show.
Yes.
And nobody contradicted it. But, you know, my version is, I think, the third version of Monday.
Mm, right.
So I never heard the other versions, and I to this very day, I don't know what they sounded like. But what I did was, I heard the song, and I did have a little shudder, because I thought, you know, it was kind of so risky.
Yeah.
I said, you're risking your career on this. He said, no. I said, well, if you're not risking yours, I'm risking mine.
But
and he was kind of like that.
Oh, no.
And then he said, so what are you going to do with it? So I said, well, I'm a huge Alfred Hitchcock fan, and I really want to create a record that is kind of, that will send a tingle down your spine.
And that did.
I think we achieved it.
Absolutely. Well, look, Phil, we're running out of time, so we must have you back on again so we can talk properly.
I wanted to quickly tell you about my electric DeLorean.
Of course, absolutely. You must do that. Yeah, but, you know, let's hear that, because you're a petrol head now.
I've been a petrol head forever.
Yes.
But then we've kind of done a little bit of a swerve and created this electric DeLorean, you know, that's running on Tesla running gear, and it is amazing. So I wanted to talk to you about that. And then I've actually got an old song of mine called Wash Your Hands.
No.
And I'm just, seriously. And I wanted to get it played. I wrote it with John Goodison years ago.
Wow.
For a band called Blackwater Junction. And it's one of the songs that Free should have actually recorded. But it's called Wash Your Hands in the Water.
Wow. And and isn't that strange? Because I've actually seen a video that Mike Reed's done, which is on a certain radio station, and it's called Wash Your Hands, and he's brought it out this week.
And has he got a track for it?
Yeah, he's really sort of singing the words over and over again with a few actual lines in there.
Is it a proper song?
It's a video more than a song.
Right, okay,
but yours is a proper song, is it?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, now this is, I don't know if you can lay your hands on it, Blackwater Junction recorded it.
I'll make a note.
And it's on an album called Blackwater Junction, and it's track four, side one.
Blackwater Junction.
Junction, yeah.
Wash
John and I used to write songs, and we'd sit there all night writing, you know, we might write half a dozen songs in an evening.
Okay. Wash your hands in the water.
Well, I want that one for the Rollers.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then another one, I think, you know, because we're doing an album, there's another song for the Rollers. And he said, well, I need some songs for Blackwater. So we used to sit down and say, okay, what are we going to write for them?
Okay.
And we used to bang these songs out.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, I'll check on it, and I guarantee I'll download it, and I'll make sure we play it next Monday night.
I've got a better idea.
Go on, then.
Go on.
Redo it. I'll release it. I'm Adrian. I'm the producer of the show here, but I'm also an independent record label.
Okay.
So get me a version. Let's get it out fast.
Well, you know, the thing is, do you re-record it? Because it's actually not bad.
Yeah.
It sounds a little dated.
Yeah.
But I thought it would be brilliant if we did it with a gospel choir.
Well,
and then I
maybe
thought
we could
I
do
might
that quickly then.
The verse, because the verse is still a bit rocky.
Yeah.
But I just thought that the chorus a black gospel choir would be quite amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what we do, Phil? I'll let you talk to Adrian. I'll give.